This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you're tuned into Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Our guest today is racer Nabil Jeffrey, a man who holds the record as the youngest ever test driver in F1 history at the age of 16. He recently made his debut at the oldest race in the world, the 24 Hours of Le Mans, together with an all-Malaysian team alongside Jasman Jaffar and Weron Tan. The team suffered an early setback with engine failure that left them in last place and four laps down, but through grit and determination managed to climb back up the standings, ultimately ending the race in a commendable 8th overall and number 4 in the LMP2 class. He joins us here today to tell us the story of this amazing comeback.
To be honest, I'm very, very thrilled because to be part of the historical event in Le Mans, I think it's an achievement already, you know. Not seeing our results, but just being there as a whole Malaysian team, I think it's amazing feat. And we all did really well, which I think makes it even better.
Mm. Tell me about the experience. You know, endurance racing is very different from, say, circuit racing, right?
I think it's a totally different approach, you know, because racing, I came from F2 before. Coming from F2, you did maybe an hour of race, one weekend, you know. Endurance racing is totally different, where you have 24 hours, you have 12 hours, you also have 6 hours. So it actually challenges your endurance more, and it makes you as more versatile as a driver as well, because it challenges different kind of aspects of yourself. Basically, I think such as tire management, how you manage the tires, how you manage the temperature of the tires, it's very different because the more you drive for a longer distance, the more you have to take care of your tires. Mm. So it's different from F2, it's a totally different challenge, but I really enjoyed the challenge that I'm facing this year. Mm. It's different and I really love it.
That's great. You're still pretty much early on in your career, right?
Yeah.
Even though you have been racing for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Le Mans is basically your landmark, your biggest race to date. How excited are you about the future?
To be honest, when I did Le Mans, before I did Le Mans, it was Le Mans, you know, it was big, but it was not something super big for me. But when I arrived to Le Mans the week before, there were already like maybe 50,000 people camping outside.
Wow.
It was huge, and I was surprised with how many people around, how many campers were there. They were true supporters, you know. They were there all day, you know, even though it's raining, sunshine, they were always there. So this is one of the things I was very surprised with Le Mans. The support that we got was huge, tremendous. Basically, as a driver, when you arrive to Le Mans, it was a very different feeling. It was one of the most historical events. It's something like Monaco for Formula One, you know. Mm-hmm. Being there, just entering the Le Mans event, you know, as a team, I feel like it was such a privilege to be there.
Right.
Racing in the track, because half of the track was a normal road and half of it is a proper track. So some roads were closed in the day, some were closed and open, you know. So you could actually walk the track only at night because in the afternoon there were normal cars driving around. But it was such an amazing experience driving the 13km track.
I guess the city of Le Mans was pretty much on a lockdown, right?
Yeah, but there were too many people around. The fans were... At the end of the day, we had about 300,000 people on the race day. It was just packed with people.
It's crazy.
Never had any experience like this in my whole life. It was amazing.
Nabil, take us back to when you started. Racing is a big part of your life since you were young.
Yeah.
How did it all start?
It started off as just a weekend thing with my dad, because my dad always loved the sons to be involved in sports, you know, to do something besides just studying.
Yeah, but football, badminton, but racing, dude. I wish my dad brought me racing.
Yeah, so that's the story behind it, because, yeah, he sent me to football school, to motorsports, which is karting. So there's a track which is quite close to my house. It's just 10 minutes away.
Wow.
So usually every weekend we would go there just to spend time together as a family. I would just drive for 10 minutes, you know, spend time with my dad, my mom. Then there was once where there was a competition managed by Hot Wheels, you know, the small car.
Yep.
So my dad was like, okay, let's try and enter this competition and see where you go. I was 7 at that time. The competition was for 8 to 12 years old. So my dad was like, let's try and ask the organizers if it's possible for you to enter since you're underage, right? So I was very lucky. They accepted my application. So I was racing against the guys who were 10, 11, 12, and at the end of the day, I finished second.
Wow.
So that's how my career actually started at the age of seven, you know, getting picked up by Hot Wheels team. Yeah, I got sponsored by a year and a half. So they got me a car, they got me an engine. So as a kid, you know, I was very excited, you know.
Living a life on the fast lane kind of thing.
I was quite lucky because I've always been consistently at the track. And when the competition was there, I knew the track. I knew which cut was fast. So basically, I was just right time, very lucky.
When was the moment you knew that, okay, this is the career path for you? I mean, at 7 years old, you didn't look back, right?
You know, as a 7 years old, I don't remember how it felt. But to be honest, I took one step at a time. This is what my dad always said. Every year was an important year for me. I need to do well in school for me to proceed further in my racing life. Because my dad and my mom has always been a fan of like finishing my schoolwork, then you can go to your track, you know, get your 10 minutes of drive or whatever. So for me, I needed to do well in school. I need to do well in karting as well. So that's where my discipline came in, you know. I had to be very disciplined in my school. So whatever it is, I finish my work, then I will be bugging my dad, let's go to the track. So everything started from there. Year by year, I started to enter competition. I was doing well. So my dad had no choice to go back because I was doing well in school and also racing. So he couldn't say no to both. So year by year, it passed. And then when I was 16, I got the chance to, because I met Tony at the racetrack. He said that this is the right moment for me to make the transition from karting to cars.
I want to talk about that right now. Very different kind of rides, right?
Yeah, it's super different because, I mean, karting is the basics of racing cars. You need to do karting because the guys in Europe, they were already karting since they were 5, 6. In Malaysia, we start at 7, so we're a bit back, but it's not too bad. So karting is a foundation for motorsports, which I feel is important. And when I was 16, I felt like I was ready to make the jump to cars, but the sponsorship was not there. It was very expensive. Just to put into perspective, one weekend of Formula BMW can be up to 100,000 ringgit.
Wow, okay. So it's not cheap.
Yeah, it's super, super expensive. So I needed some support. I needed some backing. So I was very lucky that AAsia came in to support me. That's where I met Tony. He was there to... He said, okay, I'll support you next year. He said that to me. So 2010, he supported me the whole year. So I did my first year in Formula BMW. That's when I finished fifth in the championship, in the Asian championship. So my career just started from there, you know. So I did karting, I went to Formula BMW, and then I did Formula 3, Formula 2, and now I'm doing a World Endurance Championship.
That's great. Like you said just now, in 2010, you became the youngest ever F1 test driver.
Yeah.
Tell me about the experience.
It was also super amazing. One of my best moments of my life, besides Le Mans, because I was 16 at that time, you know. When someone gives you a chance to drive Formula 1 car at the age of 16...
Wow. I just look at them and I'm happy enough.
You know, I'm like, until today, I feel like it's such an amazing opportunity. And I still wonder until today, like, how did Tony give me the chance, you know? You're 16, and then the amount of trust they have in you must be enormous, because who would just put a 16-year-old kid in a Formula 1 car, which, I mean, if something goes wrong, it can be millions, you know? But until today, I'm very grateful for the opportunity that I received. And yeah, I will remember it for the rest of my life, for sure.
You know, in F2, is there ambition or are you still gunning for the F1 spot?
Yeah, for sure. I'm currently doing LMP2 WEC, which is a championship for endurance. It's a world championship for endurance. I'm not trying to say that F1 is not my goal anymore. For sure, it's always been my goal since I was young. But at the moment, this is the best thing that I can do. And I'm very happy doing WEC. The challenges that I'm receiving this year is also a different kind of challenges, like I've explained before. You need to take care of the tyres better. And I feel that the experience that I learned in WEC might make me a better driver when I get the chance to be in Formula 1 one day. You never know.
Yep. One of those examples of F1 drivers moving to WEC, Juan Pablo Montoya, your all-time idol. How does it feel like from, you know, idolising him to racing alongside him?
Wow, it was also another great experience. To be honest, everything that I've had for the past few months has been great, you know. So I'm very blessed. when I met him in Le Mans, I was starstruck because I've been idolizing him since I was young. 7, 8, you know, since I started racing. He's always been Juan Pablo Montoya.
Why him?
It's hard to say because he just had the feeling that he is my idol, you know. I think maybe also because of how he is as a person, he's very honest with the media. He says whatever he wants to say, you know. He's not like, he doesn't just say what the team wants to say. One thing I feel is honest, and he's quick as a driver, and he has an attitude I feel like similar to me.
Okay.
So I feel we have some similarities, which I feel like it's fair for me to make him as my idol. Yeah.
Right, that's great. Let's talk a bit about Le Mans. You just came back last month.
Yeah.
You ended up 8th place, but there was a kind of incident, right? In the second lap, Jasman Jaffa was driving. Engine failure early on. You got out of the pits 4 laps down from last place, but you climbed back up.
Yeah.
You know, out of 60-ish cars, right?
Actually, the funny part, I mean, when that happened, it was not funny. But the funny part when that happened was I was asleep.
You were asleep?
Yeah, because the team was very clear. Whoever who is not driving at the time needs to rest. So that's like a system in the team. So if Jasman is driving, whoever who's driving next, it's Weyron, needs to already be prepared. And the third driver, which is me at that time, has to be sleeping or not being at the track or not being at the paddock. So at the time, I was...
How do you sleep with all those noise though?
So the team is one of the best teams. So they have already prepared what you need before the race weekend. So one of them is the noise cancellation. You know? So because we were sleeping in the cabin, which is super small, and by the racetrack. So it takes us about 5 minutes walk from the cabin to where our paddock is. So I was sleeping over there, and then when that happened, I didn't even know. Up until to the moment where I was about to drive, and I saw in the list we were 48. So at that moment, I was asking the team what actually happened. Then 2 hours later, they told me we had an engine issue.
Okay. So you weren't in that moment of crisis?
No, so. I didn't know anything, and then that's why I was so calm, you know. But the team just said, just stay calm because it's a 24-hour race and you lost 4 laps, but you never know what could happen in the future, you know. So, yeah, I just stayed calm. I was just focusing on making a good lap time every single lap, being very consistent. And at the end of the day, we made a really good job finishing 4th in the category.
That's great. So tell me a bit about the crew and the importance of the team. Like when this incident happened, how important is it, you know, keep a cool head, you know, to try to get the car out as possible and not mope?
At the moment, I was not there, you know, when it happened. So, but when I saw all the crew members, everyone was calm, like nothing happened. So I thought everything was perfect. But when I look at the screen, we were 48. So as a crew member, I think they had to be calm as well, because if they were the one not being calm, it would also affect the drivers as well. So the team members were very calm. They were just asking the drivers to drive as the best that you can. Do not think about the problems that you have with the car, because you cannot change whatever that's happened. So we were just focusing on making a very good lap time. We were just focusing on being consistent, like I said before, and not making any mistakes. Because in Le Mans, what's important is not to make any mistakes. It's a 24-hour race. It's a very long race, you know, from 3 p.m. up to 3 p.m. So the one that makes the least mistakes is the one that will be in the front, the one who wins. So,
what are some of the lessons you took away from, you know, Le Mans?
Never to give up. This is the biggest lesson, because we were last. This is a story I listened from my teammate. The first 4 laps, we were last. That was the time when I was asleep.
And 4 laps down.
Yeah, we were 4 laps down. And just to put things through, we finished the race 5 laps behind the leader.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, wow. So after 24 hours, we finished 5 laps only behind the leader. And we were potentially 2nd or 3rd at max, you know. So the potential as a team were very high. We were there, you know, on the podium if nothing happened in the engine, with the engine, with whatever that happened, we would already be on the podium. So this gives us the motivation to work harder
for
next year, you know, because we got another chance to do Le Mans. So we are very excited for Le Mans next year.
Great. You have many more races lined up for the rest of the year and for early next year. But I just want to know a bit about your training schedules, you know. What do you do in between races to keep fit?
At the moment, I'm training a lot because endurance racing is tough for the body, especially Le Mans. For me, I drove about 9 to 10 hours total, which is about 2 hours and a half, about four times of that. So you need to endure for a long period of time. So basically, at the moment I'm training, I'm doing Ironman training. So I'm cycling, running, and swimming at the same time. Not at the same time, but three sports, you know.
That would be quite a feat.
So three sports, and I'm training currently under Rupert Chen. He is one of the best Ironman in Malaysia.
Okay.
So this is what I'm doing. And besides that, I'm also doing my simulator at home because the driving time in WEC is very little. So you only drive once a month because the races are just once a month.
Mm.
So you need to drive consistently so that you don't lose touch. You know?
Okay.
So that's why I'm doing quite a lot of simulator at home.
Okay.
It's quite realistic, I feel. It's a software that's being used by the F1 guys, by the F2 guys. So I feel it's quite... I mean, it's not as real as driving the real thing.
Of course, yeah.
But it's as close as you can get.
I guess it helps you, you know, mark out the racing line. And
yeah, at least you know if it's going left or right. But actually, the simulator these days is not about going left or right only. It's the feeling that you get from the car is quite real. So, I mean, it's quite interesting to know because, I mean, I drive the real thing and I drive the simulator. So I know it's quite similar. And some people think it's not similar because you cannot imitate the G's, right? But I feel it's similar now that they make it super similar to the real.
Okay. Yeah. So like the chair has like some force.
Yeah, I mean the chair stuff. Is how I sit on the car. It's exactly with the curve, with the legs going up a bit. I wish I have a photo of it right now. But
I mean, I saw your Instagram video.
Yeah, it's that one. So it's very realistic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about going in the real car now.
Mm.
Many of us don't get an opportunity like you to sit in a high-powered car, and you know TV camera shots only show so much. You know, cockpit view doesn't represent what it is like in the hot seat itself.
Yeah,
take us behind the scenes. What are some of the things that the camera doesn't show?
Actually, as a driver, not many people know that it's very challenging. First of all, it's because it requires quite high demand of fitness, not just physically but mentally. I feel like there's a lot of buttons on the steering wheel where I need to remember what is this.
Oh, right.
So let me just tell you how many numbers there are. So there are about 8 to 10 buttons on the steering wheel that you need to remember. And then this is on the steering wheel. There's also something on the right of the car where there are numbers from A, B, C, D, E up to 1 to 10.
Okay.
So in any situation that happens during a 24-hour race where you try to reduce the time loss, the team would tell you, they won't tell you what button to press, but they will tell you there's a situation, for example, headlights. Which button do you need to press? You need to know as a driver. So you need to press the blue one. This is, for example. And if there's anything that happened in the car and the team can't tell you what happened, you need to know which button to press. So you need to always be switched on with your brain. And you need to memorize a lot
right.
of things.
So there is amount of studying involved.
Yeah,
as well.
A lot of buttons. It's just like the pilots, you know. But you're doing this while racing at 330 kilometers per hour with other cars, you know. So you have to, like I said, you have to stay calm and try to not do any mistakes. Because if you press the wrong button, it might just stop the car. So
you won't want to do that,
no.
right? How do you prepare mentally before a race?
First of all, you need to memorize really hard the buttons, what does what.
But do you listen to like music, you know, what kind of music you listen to?
Yeah, before the race, for sure, listen to something that's relaxing. Because as a person, I'm very agitated, you know, like I cannot sit still. I need to do something at any moment. So I listen to music that keeps me calm. Before the race, I like to be a bit more calm. Because you know how it is in a car, it's super upbeat, you know.
Yeah.
Your heart rate can be up to 160 for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to calm myself down before my stints, yeah.
Like you said just now, you were scouted by the AirAsia ASEAN Driver Development Program.
Yeah.
But also another one, the Petronas Talent Development Program.
Yes.
How have these programs, you know, helped get you to where you are today?
As always, I'm very blessed to be given this opportunity again to be linked with AirAsia Development Program, Petronas Program as well. Because I started off, like I said, like I explained, Tony called me in 2009 saying that he wants to help me in 2010. So that's where I got involved with the AirAsia Development Program. In 2010, they supported my career in Formula BMW. And because of that, the years after Petronas came in, I was under the program of Petronas Talent Development Program, they supported me 3 years in Formula 3. So I did 2 years of German F3, which I finished second in Germany.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was one of the biggest things for my career as well. And the year after, I did European F3. So I did finish a few top 10 finishes as well. So without them, I would not be where I am right now, you know, because the support that you need to get from these big guys are huge. You cannot just go to Formula 3 and race 3-4 million, you know. I mean, unless you are super rich as a person, but I come from a very, like, a normal family. So when I receive support like this, I really appreciate it. So without them, I would not be where I am. And I would not even be able to continue to Formula 2 because Asia supported me in Formula BMW. Petronas supported me when I was in Formula 3. And then I was lucky because in Formula 2, when I did 2 years in F2, Sepang came in to support me for 2 years. Mm. So I was just very lucky, right time, that's right place, you know.
Lots of home support.
Very, that's great. Amazing.
Talking about SIC, Sepang, yes, International Circuit, F1 is a big loss for the circuit, but what are your hopes for the future? Right now, MotoGP is kind of like the flagship.
Yeah, you're right.
Race.
You're right. I think F1 is gone at the moment, but it can be a bad thing, like I said, or it can be a good thing. I always look at the bright side. The positive side is that now we have younger drivers supported by Sepang. We have all kind of racing drivers from Sepang, not only from WEC. We have drivers supported in karting, drivers supported in TCR. Mm. So it's more diversified, you know. So we can see that these talents are supported by Sepang, which is the money used to pay for Formula 1 before. This is one of the few examples that I can give. Mm. Of course, I would love to see Formula 1 in Malaysia because it's, you know, it's one of the biggest events in the world. Nevertheless, I hope that it will come back in the future. But my hope is that Sepang will always continue to support younger talents like they supported me, Jasmine and Ron, you know, because we need a sustainable sponsor in the future, like Sepang.
Right now, I'm 24, so you're still pretty much young and early in your career. But do you see the next generation now? Do you see the 17-year-olds, the 16-year-olds? You know, are they really involved in motorsport?
To be honest, let's be honest, it's hard to find karters now from Malaysia. That's why I feel it's the right time for Sepang to come in to support the younger drivers, younger Malaysians especially. I think it's due to cost because it's expensive to race karting. To do a race in go-karting a weekend can be up to 20,000 ringgit. So not many people can afford. So I'm very lucky that when I was doing karting, I had Plus, I had a few sponsors supporting me. But not everyone in Malaysia is as lucky, you know, to be supported. So usually it's their parents that bring the money to pay. So where Sepang comes in, I feel it's important. They are supporting younger talents, and I hope that there'll be more Malaysian talents from karting that they will support in the future.
Hopefully too. Last few questions, Nabil. You and your team will be racing the rest of the year out until June 2019, the next Le Mans, right?
It's quite long.
What are your expectations for the coming races and also for the season ahead?
For me, we would like to finish on the podium. We are currently third in the championship. In the world championship, we are third, so I'm quite proud to be there at the moment. But it doesn't stop us from working hard, trying to win the championship this year. I feel that we have a very strong package, me, Jasmine and Ron. Three of us, we have different backgrounds where we came from. But as a team, we are very strong. And I hope that we can win the championship and make a good race the next few races so that we can progress further in front in the championship.
All right, we Malaysians are definitely rooting for the three of you.
Thank you so much.
Anybody listening to this now, a 16-year-old maybe or 17-year-old, wants to get into karting, what would your advice be?
I wish that they realized that 8 years before, because 16 years old is a bit too late.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe the parents should send them at the age of 7 or 8 to a karting. Because in Malaysia, there's no karting school, right? Mm. So they should go to a track that has go-karts, start renting the fun karts and see if how they do, as if they really like the sport or if it's just a short-term thing, because it's not worth to buy a kart and then in a few months the son or the daughter, they're not interested anymore.
Because
a kart can cost 40,000 ringgit. So it's a huge investment. So I suggest to go to get the fun kart, just to go around. Don't have to buy the kart, just go around on the fun kart, just pay about 50 ringgit for 10 minutes. See if your son or your daughter enjoys doing it, and then you try and pursue. But My advice is whatever they love, as a parent or whoever, you need to support your son or your daughter, because it's important. I got the most support I can from my parents, from my family. So I feel like you guys should do your part.
That was Nabil Jaffrey, endurance racer who recently made his debut at the oldest race in the world, the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's show. But if you'd like to check out the interview again, head over to our website www.bfm.my/Barnan to get the podcast. Also, you can get in touch with us by tweeting us. We are at BFM Radio. My name's Dara Ong. Thanks for listening. And do join us again next week right here on Barnan, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.